is the Quality News Network. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld testifying before Congress today is warning against pulling U.S. troops out of Iraq too early, saying it would be seen as a victory by extremists who want to control the Middle East region. In a Baghdad marketplace today, a motorcycle bomb killed at least 12 people, injured as many as 30. Another 13, including a 4 Iraqi police, were killed in separate incidents both north and south of the capital city. Two U.S. troops, both Army and Marine, died in fighting in Iraq's Anbar province yesterday, bringing to 10 the number of U.S. military deaths in that area in less than a week. British Prime Minister Tony Blair says he's hopeful that the U.N. Security Council will agree on a ceasefire resolution within the next 2 days in Lebanon. However, Hezbollah says it will not accept one until all Israeli troops are out of the country. Israeli airstrikes are again hitting Beirut's southern suburbs today, pounding Hezbollah targets across Lebanon with 120 bombs. That's the most fired by Israel in 1 day since the hostilities began 3 weeks ago. Hezbollah has responded by firing rockets into northern Israel again, this time killing 7 Israeli civilians. In addition, 3 Israeli soldiers were killed in fighting in the south. Lebanon's prime minister says the country's death toll from the fighting has now reached more than 900, with 3,000 injured. A suicide car bomb in an Afghanistan marketplace has killed 21 civilians. In the same province, a NATO soldier from Canada was killed by a roadside bomb. He's the 4th NATO fatality since they took command in Kandahar province earlier this week. A new Scripps Howard, Ohio University poll shows that more than a third of the American public suspects that federal officials assisted in the 9/11 terrorist attacks or took no action to stop them so that the U.S. could go to war in the Middle East. Cuban President Fidel Castro's estranged sister Juanita, a Miami resident, tells CNN that her relatives in Cuba say he is still very sick, but no longer in intensive care. Castro underwent intestinal surgery earlier this week, prompting him to temporarily hand power over to his younger brother. The American East Coast in for another day of steamy weather, but a break is expected this evening when a cold front arrives. Until then, however, triple-digit heat indexes for millions between New England and South Carolina. A typhoon has slammed into southern China, forcing the evacuation of hundreds of thousands of residents there. Tropical Storm Chris has weakened, no longer expected to become this season's first hurricane. And massive protests continue in Mexico City, where supporters of the losing presidential candidate are protesting the results of the election. This is the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
New applications for unemployment insurance rose by 14,000 last week to 315,000. Both the Bank of England and the European Central Bank raised interest rates today by 0.25%. Ford is recalling 1.2 million large pickup trucks, SUVs, and vans because of a problem with the vehicle's cruise control system that could lead to a fire. They recalled 4 million vehicles last year for the same problem. Apple Computer is teaming with GM, Ford, and Mazda to integrate its iPod into car audio systems beginning with the 2007 model year. Among retail giants, Walmart, Nordstrom's, and Penney's all reporting higher sales today for the month of July. Shares of Starbucks dropped 10% today after the company reported that July sales grew at the slowest pace in 5 years. Starbucks is blaming the nation's heat wave, which has increased the demand for cold rather than hot drinks. IBM has announced that it's buying MRO Software, a Massachusetts maker of asset and service management software. And Japan's foreign minister has paid a surprise visit to Baghdad, bringing with him $29 million to help jumpstart Iraq's economic development. Gold is trading at $653.70 an ounce this hour. Light sweet crude is at $75.15 a barrel, up down 66 cents. On Wall Street, trading is mixed. Dow Industrials are up 24 points at 11,224. NASDAQ is up 1. S&P 500 is down 1. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is a weekly review. There are lots and lots to talk about in the news. And as always, you're welcome to bring up whatever topic you wish just by calling in at 888-488-MARK. Well, I guess I could start by talking about the heat wave. I don't know if it's as hot as it is here where you live, but we've had triple-digit temperatures in the Washington, D.C. area for days now. My air conditioning is just can't handle it all. So I'm sitting here sweating, and maybe you are too. But I want to talk about the heat. I want to talk about the ongoing Mexican election. The minimum wage estate tax fight that we talked about yesterday is, I think, heading for a defeat, and we'll mention that. Kansas moderates are elected in there to shut off the debate over evolution. It isn't a debate. It is science. Another gay Arabic translator has been fired, this time on the basis of anonymous emails. Military lawyers oppose George Bush's plan to basically throw people in jail without trial. There's a change in Cuba. There's arguments over Plan B. The list goes on and on and on. And then I got to talk about Mel Gibson. You knew I was going to talk about that. You know, and if I think he's an anti-Semite, but I don't think he's beyond help. And I want to talk about the Lieberman-Lamont election in Connecticut. This is really an important one because I think it really signals a change in the Democratic Party. As always, we can talk about the war in the Middle East. We can talk about Israel. It's certainly a topic that I talk about a lot here on air. But I think this is a war now that's going to continue now for weeks, for months. I think that we just need to be patient at this point to let it continue. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm not focusing on it so much as usual. I think a ceasefire only works to the advantage of Hezbollah. I will notice one thing, though, and that is that if you notice, the United Nations, the French, the world community, with the exception of the United States, all seem to think that Israel should give in to terrorists. They think, I haven't heard a single person, other than our government, and for once I'm going to praise George Bush, I haven't heard a single person say, well, we can end this if Hezbollah will just return the people they kidnapped. No one seems to say that. They're talking about rewarding the kidnapping, rewarding it by either having Israel release convicted murderers, and I mean people that snuck across the Israeli border, went into people's homes and massacred people there, just walked in, killed a man, a woman, and his two children, point-blank range, including a four-year-old girl. That's the person that Hezbollah wants released. That's the person that the United Nations and the French and everyone want released. They want Israel to capitulate to terrorists, even though the United Nations said that this disputed area called Shabbat Farms is not disputed. It does not belong to Lebanon. They had a whole arbitration. They brought in testimony. They drew the lines very clearly. Now some of the United Nations want to open up that debate again. I don't get it. I don't get it. When another area was disputed, this would be Taba in the south, Israel and Egypt had a dispute over a very small border area that includes a hotel. They sent it to arbitration. The arbitration found for the Egyptians against the Israelis, and the Israelis left. In this case, the arbitration, the United Nations, which is certainly no friend of Israel, found that it was not part of Lebanon. Israel stayed. And now, suddenly, because of terrorism, they want to overturn court decisions. What other nation in the world is urged to capitulate to terrorism except for Israel? I don't know of one. But I want to talk about a lot of the other things that go on in the news. I guess a lot of Jews in the news, because certainly Mel Gibson has had his say. If you've been living in a cave, then you don't know that Mel Gibson was recently arrested, going 87 in a 45-mile zone, stopped for drunk driving. In California, he had a 0.12 alcohol level, where 0.08 is the legal limit. But that's not that controversial. I mean, people in Hollywood get stopped for drunk driving all the time. After all, our president was convicted of drunk driving, and our vice president was convicted of it twice, making them, in fact, the only convicted criminals ever to hold office in the United States that I'm aware of. That's not, to me, the incident. Obviously, I don't support drunk driving, and he should be stopped. The real issue is that Mel Gibson was shouting curse words about Jews when he was arrested. Now, that's some weird stuff, don't you think? I mean, the guy's arrested for drunk driving. I'm not quite sure how a massive Jewish conspiracy caused Mel Gibson to drink too much and get behind the wheel. Maybe that's in the bylaws of the protocols of the Elders of Zion, but I don't think so. So he's blaming the Jews. He's saying Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world. He's asking the police if the police officer is Jewish, and shouting a bunch of epithets. Now, why does this matter? So you got a guy that's a clear anti-Semite. Why does this matter? Well, I think it partly matters because when he had his movie, The Passion of the Christ, a number of people argued, Mel Gibson isn't anti-Semitic. It's just a movie that portrays the Jews killing Jesus and showing the Jews of that time in very stereotypical fashion with hook noses and evil glimpses and the like. But it's just a movie. And we were told to ignore the fact that Mel Gibson's father has expressly denied the Holocaust occurred. Now, I don't know too many non-wackos and non-anti-Semites. In fact, I think it's pretty clear that if you deny the Holocaust occurred, you are an anti-Semite or a Nazi. So his father did that, but we said don't take that out against Mel Gibson. And when Mel Gibson has talked about the Holocaust, he says, it's all a numbers game, it's not that big a deal. He has downplayed the Holocaust, but we're told, no, that's not evidence he's an anti-Semite. Well, I say in vino veritas. That's a formal Latin expression that means in wine there is truth. It seems to me that if when you're drunk, you say what you truly think. You know, I think this is human experience. I think we've all seen it. We've all seen angry drunks, and we know that, you know, they're pretty angry underneath. We've seen sad drunks, and I think those people are sad. We've seen happy drunks. I tend to think I'm generally a happy drunk, and I think I'm generally a happy person. I'm a firm believer that when you're drunk, a lot of times it withdraws your inhibitions. It definitely brings out things that you wouldn't ordinarily say. But I think in vino veritas, what is said goes on underneath. And so Mel Gibson's first apology, the one made before he knew that what happened would be publicized, was really not at all good enough. He apologized for being drunk. He really didn't mention his anti-Semitic statements. That wasn't enough. But the real scandal here, I think, is the Los Angeles Police Department, because of what they did and what they do to protect celebrities. I mean, here you have Gibson. He wasn't handcuffed. And I understand that's within the policeman's discretion. But, okay, so he wasn't handcuffed. He starts to run away, so the cop catches him and then handcuffs him. But more importantly is how the report was sanitized. Now, if you and me get stopped by the police, our reports aren't sanitized. Everything that is in the report is in the report. But in terms of giving it out to the press, they sanitized the report. They tried to protect Mel Gibson, who had given some money to some police causes. They tried to protect him by taking out his anti-Semitic statements. Well, who are they serving when they do that? There was an open controversy, after all, as to whether or not Mel Gibson was an anti-Semite or not. Many said he was. Many said he wasn't. It seems to me that this pretty much makes it clear, if you were in doubt, that he is anti-Semitic. And why were the police trying to protect him? I am happy to say that the police are investigating this, the sanitization of the report. I've always been a big fan, actually, not of the LAPD, but of the Los Angeles City Government. I very much like its mayor, Antonio Villaraigosa. I supported him in the past. And he's put a police inspector on the job to find out what went on. Good for the mayor of Los Angeles. Good for the sheriff of Los Angeles, Lee Baca. He's going to get to the bottom of this, I have no doubt, and I'm glad about it. But what does this have to do, as some people have asked on my blog, with The Passion of the Christ? Could it still be that Mel Gibson is an anti-Semite, but his movie isn't? Well, you know, we all judge art on its own. It's sort of hard to tell. Wagner was an anti-Semite, but he made great operas. Henry Ford was an anti-Semite, but he made great cars. We know plenty of racists. Thomas Jefferson had slaves, right? And indeed, apparently, had children by one of them, Sally Hemings, but he wrote the Declaration of Independence. So there's good and bad in everyone, but, well, not everyone, most people. But I do think that looking now, knowing what we know now, we can see that this was a movie, The Passion of the Christ, that really had some disturbing anti-Semitic elements. Again, it seemed to focus, and I complained about this movie at the time, it seemed to focus not on anything positive that Jesus had done, but on his misery, on his suffering. I, for one, thought the film was too gory, that it wasn't one that children should see. I mean, all it is, it's just the movie, you know, beat Jesus, make him bleed, well, look at the marks, you know, watch him in a bloody pulp. It was very disturbing to me. Now, I realize Mel Gibson likes violence, but here you have this beating of Jesus, and you have the Jews are clearly causing it, which you know, raises an old theological debate that I don't know that we need to go into here unless you want to call in and talk about it. But it seems to me that this movie, which is in, you know, it's not even in English, it's in Aramaic, shown in other countries, shown certainly in Arab countries, but also shown in Europe, where today, in fact, the Jewish businesses in Rome were sacked by an organization calling itself, let me get it right here, the Armed Revolutionary Fascists. Isn't it nice to know that Armed Revolutionary Fascists are still out there sacking Jewish shops? This kind of movie, all over the world, I think, leads to increased anti-Semitism. You have a clear villain, the Jews. You have a clear victim, Jesus, the Son of God, and Jews are to blame for the deicide, and apparently they're still to blame today. Now, I realize that many, many Americans, most Americans, in fact, that saw the show, that talked to me, most Christian Americans, didn't find it anti-Semitic. And they told me, you know, well, it's just a period piece. It's just an historical piece. I would venture to say that if you went and you saw that movie and you're not an anti-Semite, you didn't find the movie anti-Semitic. In fact, I credit the great, great, great majority of American Christians who saw the film and really didn't see anything anti-Semitic, because they're not ones to say that whatever happened 2,000 years ago, we need to do as the armed revolutionary fascists have done, you know, break into Jewish shops and try to kill people. The great, great majority of American Christians are not anti-Semitic, and therefore I don't think they saw the harm in this film. But it was a worldwide film, and I do think that if you were predisposed to anti-Semitism, this was a movie that, might have pushed you over the edge. On the other hand, again, this is all from comments from my blog, there are those that say, you know, is Mel Gibson beyond redemption? Can't we forgive him? I say we can. Definitely we can. And in fact, I was much more impressed with his second apology, which owned up to the fact that he had said anti-Semitic comments. Now, you know, it still wasn't a complete apology. He said, I am not an anti-Semite. I am not a bigot. I don't believe that for a second. I think he is an anti-Semite, and I think he is a bigot. And I also think and wonder whether these apologies were not put forward by his public relations person. You know, they do what they can to try to get rid of the criticism, and I think they did so here. Time will tell with Mel Gibson. I think the jury's out. I think he is an anti-Semite now. But I think he can change. He's not an evil man. You know, he's not the leader of Iran or North Korea. He's, as some have suggested, no, he's human. And I think he can change. And I think we need to find out whether this is just a public relations ploy. You know, he doesn't want to lose jobs in Hollywood, so his public relations manager puts out something that sounds good, or whether he really wants to change. Now, obviously, he needs treatment for alcohol abuse, and I think he's getting that, and that's good. But he also needs treatment for bigotry abuse. He needs treatment for prejudice. And he talked about meeting and talking with members of the Jewish community, and I welcome that. And I'll tell you what I think. If I were Mel Gibson's publicist, I'll tell you what I think would make all the difference in the world. The difference is Mel Gibson needs to take a trip to Auschwitz. Mel Gibson needs to go to Poland. He needs to see the concentration camps. He needs to see the piles of hair and body parts and bones and choose. He needs to see the consequences of his kind of hatred. And I think if he would go there, he might just have a mind-changing experience. He might just get rid of his anti-Semitism. And so if I were Mel Gibson's publicist, I would say he needs to talk to Jews, because they're good ones, they're bad ones, they're all kinds, they're people like me that are both good and bad. It's just like any person on earth. Prejudice is prejudice. Unreasonable prejudice is bigotry, and it's about time that Mel Gibson changes. So I hope he does. I look forward to that, and I look forward to his redemption. Toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. As I said at the top of the hour, there's a lot of topics I want to talk about. I don't know if I can cover them all, but you can help me decide which topics you care most about. So just give us a call, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, or comment on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. We'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected, would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow. Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. A lot to talk about in the news. And I guess my last Jews in the News comment has to do with Joe Lieberman. And in this case, I'm not supporting the Jewish candidate. And it's really got nothing to do, of course, with his religion. It has to do with Joe Lieberman. And the fact that he is, always by George Bush's side. He's called George Bush's favorite Democrat, and I think he is. Here's the problem. Joe Lieberman, while he's fine on domestic issues, he's always seems to be backing off and criticizing Democrats and, of course, supporting the war in Iraq. So I think that Ned Lamont's got the right idea, and I not only endorse him, but I think it's vital for the Democratic Party to elect someone like Ned Lamont. You know, whenever we have a move to the right, the Republicans would have these primaries where they would have right-wing Republicans knock off moderates, and it moved the entire country to the right. Well, now at this point, we have a left wing, if you will, someone attacking Lieberman from the left. And I think that's good. I think that's good for the Democratic Party. Because at some point, you can go so far right that you're out of the party, and I think Lieberman's done that. And I think that if Lamont wins, and I think he will win, so let's just say when Lamont wins, people will look back on this election and say this was a time when the Democratic Party said enough is enough. Enough rolling over, enough protecting Bush, enough just going along to get along. This is a president that never wanted to be bipartisan, that has always, even after September 11th, refused Democratic attempts to work with him to make the country better. I remember the clearest example after September 11th when Joe Lieberman himself proposed the Department of Homeland Security. Now, I think it was a good idea. We can argue about whether it was or not. It's a close decision, but on balance, I think it was a good decision. The idea was to bring in all the government agencies together so that we could determine where there's a threat and act quickly. So it was Lieberman's idea, and a good one, in my view. Bush refused, said, I don't want it, and for 9 months he said, I'm not going to listen to this Department of Homeland Security idea. When he found out that polls supported the idea, he turned on a dime and said, all right, I support the Department of Homeland Security, but not Lieberman. No, I want a Department of Homeland Security that takes away labor rights, takes away health care, takes away wages, takes away their right to join unions, takes away the people's right in these departments to be whistleblowers. In other words, to say when the department itself is breaking the law and not be fired for it. Now, these were labor laws that had been around in the federal government for decades. But Bush turned on a dime and said, all right, Lieberman, I'll take your Homeland Security idea, but I'm going to stick it to the Democrats and I'm going to stick it to the American workers. And in fact, one of the main ones they stuck it to was Georgia Senator Max Cleland, a Vietnam veteran, someone who lost three limbs fighting as a patriot in the war. And, of course, the Georgia senator, Republican, who ran against him, showed pictures of his face morphing into Osama bin Laden because he didn't support a Homeland Security Department that didn't protect American labor. So Lieberman reached out to the president, proposed a good idea, and the president slapped him silly, took Lieberman's great idea, and then used it to specifically screw over American labor. And Lieberman still got kisses on the cheeks by George Bush. Instead of recognizing that this is a president that hates bipartisanship, that will sell the country down the river if that's what he has to do to get Democrats, Lieberman said, all right, so we'll work on the next bill. And that's why Joe Lieberman has to go. He has to understand that it's one thing to work with a Republican president, a Republican Congress that supports bipartisanship, that wants the nation to come together. There have been Republican presidents in the past that did that. There are certainly some Republicans in Congress to do that. John McCain, who I disagree with on a number of issues, is one of those Republicans. But not this president. And Lieberman, you've gotten too close to this president. It's time for a change. It's time for Ned Lamont. I do think Ned Lamont will win the Democratic primary. It's August 8th. It's this Tuesday. If you're listening in Connecticut, I hope you pull the lever for him. But it won't be over then. Because Lieberman, I think, I don't think it's very loyal to the Democratic Party, has said he's going to run as an independent if Lamont wins, I think Lamont will win, and that will be an interesting race because Lieberman does pull to the right, and he will get a lot of Republican votes. And even though I think Lieberman will lose the Democratic primary, I think it's actually quite likely that he'll be elected as an independent that votes with the Democrats, much as Jim Jeffords did in Vermont. And I have to say, I don't think that's necessarily a bad outcome. While I support Ned Lamont and I would vote for him both in the primary and in the general election, if Lamont wins the primary but Lieberman wins the general election, that may not be a bad result because I think Joe Lieberman will have gotten the message. He will have gotten the message by that close call that there comes a point when to be a loyal Democrat, you got to be in the loyal opposition. You have to challenge the President of the United States. So even if that happens, I think it'll be a good wake-up call for Joe Lieberman, who I have to say, he's not a bad person. I just think he wants to be bipartisan at a time when the Republicans running the government don't want to be bipartisan. I got a lot more to talk about, all those issues I talked about at the top of the hour. And, of course, your calls can help me determine what to talk about. It's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Or you can comment on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. We'll be right back after this.
Carter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Bruce Birch radio program, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m., connecting people.
Listen, not only we have the founding fathers and mothers, now we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about that, sir.
It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
Jim, I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I sent you an email. Do you have it replied?
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are a total camp.
Bruce, I love you more.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. I'm going to have to put treat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's first bitch fight on internet radio. This is great.
This is great. So do I have to flip a coin, or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Birch, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Back to the Inside Scoop. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. Or you can just talk amongst yourselves in our chat room, which is at headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Let's go to the phones. Gene from Oregon, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark.
What's on your mind, Gene?
Well, I suppose, getting to Mr. Lieberman, really don't think, even if he runs as an independent, that he would necessarily be a better choice. I really, at this point, if I were the Connecticut electorate folks, I would probably write Joe. I would definitely vote Lamont because, as far as I'm concerned, true Lieberman isn't quite as fanatical as his Republican opponent, at least as far as I know. But in some ways, I think seeing someone who's openly hostile, or at least from the way I think of it, would be clearer than getting Mr. Lieberman, because I look at Mr. Lieberman and look at him as Zell Miller clone, kind of.
Well, I think that's a little harsh. Let me just say, first of all, that I agree with you that I am endorsing both Lamont in the primary and in the general. I do, if I were a Connecticut voter, and of course I'm not, but if I were, I would vote for Lamont, not only in the primary, which I think he's pretty much got a lock on, the latest I never can pronounce that. Quinnipiac poll, something like that, apparently shows him 12 points up in the primary. I would also vote for Lamont in the general, and I endorse him for that reason. I do think, though, that it's wrong to characterize Joe Lieberman as a Zell Miller. I mean, Zell Miller actively turned against his party. He actively, if you saw him at the Republican National Convention, I mean, he was all hellfire and brimstone, vicious, vicious attacks on the Democratic Party. That's not Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman, as far as I'm concerned, is a right-leaning Democrat. I think he still considers himself a Democrat. And frankly, on some domestic issues, he's very good. He's certainly fine on labor issues. He joined with Ned Lamont in condemning Walmart recently for its attacks on workers. He's certainly fine with regard to civil rights, affirmative action. I do disagree with him on some domestic issues. I think he's pushing the faith-based initiative. I think he's dead wrong. But the main reason why people are kicking out Lieberman, we all know it, it's the Iraq War. He's supported it at the beginning, the middle, the end. He still supports it. And I just think he's wrong. I don't think he's evil. I don't think he's – Zell Miller might be evil. I mean, Zell Miller is a wacko. Yeah. I don't think Lieberman – I think Lieberman legitimately believes what he believes, and I think it's time for voters to show him to the door. But I wouldn't demonize him, as I think is probably appropriate with someone like Zell Miller.
Well, maybe, think? But I really – one of the issues that I'm not clear on where he stands is net neutrality. I know – or I've heard, for example, that today Senator Stevens is trying to look for a cloture vote in on the debt neutrality, and Joe Lieberman happens to be one of three swing vote people on the committee that Senator Stevens is on, and as far as I know, he hasn't really given a position. So,
Gene, that's a great question. It's one of my strongest issues. In fact, I did a really good show on internet neutrality. I hope you had a chance to listen to it. It's right there on my website, radioinsidescoop.com. And I firmly believe this is one of the important issues of our day. I mean, if we don't allow net neutrality, if we don't require telecommunications companies to allow us to visit rivals' websites, it would be like having a phone company that didn't let me call, Verizon not letting me call Bell South or whatever. It would totally ruin competition on the Internet. I firmly believe in net neutrality. I don't know Joe Lieberman's position on the issue, but I would bet that an email from you, or even better, from someone in Connecticut, I think he could be persuaded to go the right way on that. I know that Hillary Clinton, for example, initially, and she's not a liberal Democrat. I consider her more of a, Democratic Leadership Council Democrat, a moderate to left of center, but maybe right of the middle of the Democratic Party Democrat. She came down very strongly in favor of net neutrality recently. So I think Lieberman can be pushed to do the right thing on this issue, and I would bet that if you and others were to push him, he might just come down the right way on that one. But I don't know. I admit I don't know his position on the issue.
Well, we'll just have to see. Anyway, I will let you go. And
Well, thanks for calling, Gene. I always appreciate when you do.
Not a problem.
Hey, how's the weather in Oregon, by the way?
Much, much better.
Really? Because it's still 100 degrees over here, but y'all probably get these little light rains or something.
It's probably somewhere around 66, which is about
66? Oh, I am so jealous.
I can tell
anyway,
you.
Anyway, thanks for your call.
I can tell you.
I appreciate it.
Just a second. It is... 60, yeah, I was right, 68. Close.
Well, it's 101 here, so like I said, I'm very jealous. Hey, thanks for your call, Gene. I appreciate it. Speaking of the heat wave, if you'd missed my show on global warming, we'll be replaying it over the next couple weeks. But if you missed that show, you really need to take a listen to it, because the guest I had, Dr. Bill Shimidas, he's a climate scientist. He's the chief scientist, in fact, for environmental defense. And what I was impressed so much about that interview is that he didn't overstate things. He didn't say, we're all falling in the sea and the oceans are rising tomorrow. He very clearly laid out the strong scientific evidence for global warming. In fact, I tried to say, isn't this the hottest year on ever? And he said, nope, Mark can't say that because the year's not finished yet. But then he described last year as one of the hottest years ever. So this is a very careful scientist. And he describes exactly what's going on with global warming, exactly what's causing it, and exactly what we can do about it. So if you're on the East Coast, you're not lucky like Gene in Oregon, and you're suffering under this heat wave, Take a listen to that show, and I think you'll really understand what's going on. One of the interesting things politically, of course, about global warming is the fact that the Republicans and George Bush are doing nothing about it. In fact, some of them are even challenging whether it exists or not. If you listen to my show, you know that really even the dissenters are arguing only about the rate of increase, but not about the fact that it's happening. Only the president seems to be living in that kind of zone where he can deny science completely. But some states are having to work on their own, and I want to credit California, both its Republican governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who I disagree with on a number of other issues, but I credit him, and also one of my favorite mayors, Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, for working to stop global warming themselves, not waiting for the federal government. One of the things they're doing is they're trying to coordinate the two largest ports in California, Los Angeles and Long Beach, to work together because they create a lot of carbon dioxide gases, and so I want to credit them for that. Meanwhile, in the heart of the heat, in a much hotter country in Mexico, people don't talk about what's going on there, but there is ongoing demonstrations because the election is not resolved yet. And I got to give them credit there. Unlike in America, where we had Al Gore win the election in 2000, or at least make it unclear, and we just accepted the Supreme Court, which refused to count the votes and just said Bush is the winner, installed him. The Mexican people aren't doing that. And the supporters of the candidate Obrador are standing in the streets and saying, we won't leave the streets until you count every vote. And I wonder, those of you that don't think every vote should be counted, do you really believe in democracy? I mean, whether it was America in 2000 or Mexico in 2006, how can you possibly argue that all the votes shouldn't be counted? If you believe in democracy, you very carefully take out each vote. It doesn't take that much time. It might take 3-4 days. And you do so in a way that both parties are represented. And you look and you count every single vote. The votes for one candidate here, the votes for another candidate there, the votes that are unclear, you put in the third place and you let a judge decide under the same standard. Folks, democracy is too important not to count the votes. And I would hope that in America, if we once again have an election where one side says they won and the other side says, I want to count the votes, I hope that Americans will turn out in the streets if we have to make sure that every vote is counted. Elsewhere in the news, we talked yesterday about the minimum wage estate tax bill, a bill that helps a few workers at the expense of giving massive, massive money to heirs of super rich people. It's the bill that would, you know, help Anna Nicole Smith get $1 billion more while people making minimum wage get a few pennies more. It's an awful bill. I'm very proud that labor, which wants a minimum wage like nobody's business, is out opposing this bill. And I'm particularly proud of Pat Murray and Maria Cantwell, the senators from Washington State. Now, the Republicans, in their cynical way they do, piled in a lot of things for some wavering senators. The wavering senators were from Washington State and West Virginia. For Washington State, they put in a lot of things to help lumber yards and lumber companies, I think it's $30 billion or some in tax breaks for them and for mining interests in West Virginia. Basically, they want taxpayers to pay for coal mines, for cleaning up coal mines when, you know, the coal miners, they got the money from it, they should clean it up themselves. Well, I'm proud to say that Cantwell and Murray, the two Washington senators, have come out strongly against this cynical bill, and I'm very proud of that. And I'm hopeful that the West Virginia senators, which I haven't heard about yet, but I'm hoping that Byrd and Rockefeller will also strongly come out against this bill. It's a bad bill. Let's defeat it. Let's filibuster it in the Senate. And maybe, as Bill Samuel talked about yesterday, maybe then we'll have another bill that simply increases the minimum wage, something we've been waiting for a decade. Still lots to talk about when I come back, an election of Kansas moderates, a firing of an Arabic translator, changes in Cuba, Plan B, and any topic you want to talk about. It's all here on the Week in Review, and we'll be right back at 888. Let me get out the number, 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back. Call that number. Join the discussion right after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Head on with Bob Kincaid.
Let's go back to the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told, on line one.
Hi, Bob!
Well, Mr. Clampett, how are you, sir?
It's fine, sir. Y'all have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on this subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
So you catch on quick, I tell you. You're very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I have to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head on.
Hi, you've reached the Johnsons. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about the apartment. Please give me a call back at 2.
Hi, hello. This is Rafael Paredes. Please call me back at 718.
This is Jeannie Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can please call me back.
Hello, my name's Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello. This is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well, you're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Back to the Inside Scoop. It's the weekly review. All topics are valid. And I've got someone on the line who's one of my favorite callers. He and I usually agree, but I suspect we disagree because he wants to talk about Israel and Hezbollah. And we've had a little bit of going on back and forth on the blog. But Gordon from Michigan, you're always welcome here on the Inside Scoop. Go ahead. Make your point.
Hi, Mark. Yeah, I'm somewhat disappointed by your black and white positioning between Arabs and Israelis in this issue. I understand it. I understand that the molecules of your body are becoming more, you know, you're realizing your Jewishness more and more. I have many other Jewish friends, and they've commented on this to me that, you know, at this moment of crisis, they become more and more Jewish. And your Jewishness is a very integral part of yourself. But I see it. I see you creating almost a veiled demonizing of the Arabs at this point. And you know, I wish you could become more aware of the area, the grayness, the shades of gray in this, and that's where the solution of this problem lies. And Israelis being able to understand the Arab positioning, and the Arabs being able to understand the Israeli positioning, and this idea of coexistence is something that is a necessity. That after 60 years of this struggle, that there are many people with enough brains and enough going beyond the animal instinct, getting beyond the pain and going to these areas of forgiveness, that there are enough people that can get a solution that is not violent and continuing the violence.
Gordon, I do hear what you're saying, and I know from whence you come. I know that you support the Department of Peace, and you seem to, you know, generally always believe that people should, you know, we should all get along. I don't think it's possible in this case. Not with all the Arabs, of course not, but in this particular case, when you have Hezbollah go across an international boundary to commit an act of war, I really don't see it much different from Al-Qaeda. Israel has to respond and respond back strongly. I mean, it's true that I'm Jewish, but I don't think I'm responding as a Jew. I think I'm responding as a sovereign nation that's attacked. I think the same would be true if it, you know, if France is attacked or England's attacked or the United States is attacked. It's the amazing thing is that, you know, people sort of wrap it all up into one thing, and that's okay, but you have to look at it. There's a very specific thing here. You have a terrorist organization funded by Iran and Syria that purposely declared war on Israel, is sending thousands of missiles across the border, and it's amazing to me that the world is calling for Israeli restraint. I mean, there are laws of war, and the laws of war are that if you're attacked, you are allowed to respond, and respond strongly. That's one of the reasons why I never supported the war in Iraq, is because we were not attacked by Iraq, but I did support the war in Afghanistan. And I don't know of a single other country on earth, and maybe you can give me an example, because I can't think of one, where a country was attacked unprovoked and responded, and they said to the victim, you know, be careful, don't shoot down a missile that's coming from a civilian site. I don't get it, Gordon, but maybe you can explain it to me.
Well, this didn't start with missiles. It started with what? It started with some type of a sortie where an Israeli soldier was captured. Maybe a couple were killed in the sortie. And for a matter of a few days, it was about negotiating over the reestablishment of this captured soldier.
Well, yeah, what happened is Hezbollah crossed. Yeah, go ahead.
And I'm thinking at this point, the militarist factions of Israel saw, well, this is an opportunity to clear out this Hezbollah threat, which we know is along the borders. So in a sense, it's sort of a passive-aggressive preemption.
But Gordon,
does that make any sense?
Okay, here's what Hezbollah did. They crossed an international boundary recognized by the United Nations, recognized by every Arab country. They crossed the international boundary. They went into Israel. They killed 8 soldiers and kidnapped 2 and brought them back to Lebanon and said, we will free them if you free a number of convicted murderers in your jails. Now, I don't know how you think Israel should have responded, but I can tell you this. Hezbollah was not willing to release the soldiers unless Israel released its jails of convicted murderers. And I don't know what you think the answer was, but I think Israel gave the response that everyone knew they would, that Hezbollah knew they would. How? I mean, if you don't respond, then there are more kidnappings, right?
Okay, well, as the extortion went on, Israel went in and they took out some ministers of some important heads of Hezbollah, and I agree they had a right to go into certain areas along the border and clean out those areas. But then, what about bombing Beirut with civilians not warned? It went a little over the board there, I think.
Well,
when they started
in Beirut,
they
only bombed certain areas, of course, of Beirut. They bombed the areas where Hezbollah has its bases. I wish war could be so fine-tuned as to be, you know, as to carefully, I mean, if you could have a bomb that found out if you were a terrorist and then, you know, exploded in front of you, that would be really good. But I don't think people realize how much that, in fact, Israel has restrained itself. There's an interesting article in today's Washington Post, I think I'll post it on the air, by a retired lieutenant general from the Israeli Defense Forces. And he points out that at one point they knew Hamas was in a 3-story building, and they didn't want to endanger the 40 families who lived around there. So instead of using a large bomb that would destroy the entire building, they used a small bomb that only took out the top floor, and they met on the bottom floor. So they escaped. And he points out that he doesn't think the United States and Afghanistan, if they knew Al-Qaeda was down there, would have hesitated. To me, what he says, I think, let me just quote from it, and I'll definitely give you a chance to respond. This is what Moshe Yaalon says. He says, quote, "The need to distinguish combatants from civilians is central. Those who condemned Israel for what happened at Cana have rewarded those for whom this principle is meaningless." In other words, if you blame Israel for responding to terrorists that set up shop in civilian areas, instead of blaming the terrorists who set up shop in civilian areas, then terrorists know in the future that the best way to attack is to put everything in civilian areas, and then they're safe. No one can ever attack them. They can, you know, kill Israeli civilians at will, and if they fight back, Israel's in trouble. It seems to me that, and by the way, it turns out there was 20-something, not 50-something, not that that's a good thing, but it shows the excesses of Hezbollah. When they put those disabled children in that building and then shot off a missile from the top of the building in Cana, where there had been an action before, and they knew that this could be used as a public relations ploy that was cynical, and it worked. And it's amazing to me that we don't see ringing condemnations of Hezbollah for shooting a missile off a civilian site. Go ahead. I'll give you the last word.
Well, I think, you know, I think everybody, I think it's been shown that the whole scenario of that particular massacre is an iniquitous action by Hezbollah, of course. But we also see when we open this can of worms that restraint becomes pretty much an oxymoron. It's just, you know, it's like saying, we didn't use the biggest bunker buster bombs we could have used. We could have nuked them, too. You know, the U.S. could have nuked Vietnam. It's, you know, it's like restraint doesn't really cover it. It's like you try to put a blanket down on what you can possibly do to retaliate in war, and it just becomes a whole mass of blood. And
Gordon, we have to wrap up because my time is up, but I appreciate your calling. You and I will definitely discuss this again in the future. In my view, it's hard to win a war with restraint. I think we actually successfully did one in Bosnia, in Kosovo. We actually won that war only with an air war because the people themselves decided not to fight. I think that's what Israel's trying to do. But many, many wars, whether it's World War II or our own Civil War, even our Revolutionary War, we kept going until the enemy stopped fighting. And people are now, Arabs are praising Hezbollah. They're saying that we're in here for the long haul. They wanted this war. And unless Israel deals a decisive blow, I think there always will be war there. So we disagree on that, but call at any time, and we'll definitely take it on again. That's it for the Inside Scoop. I hope you enjoyed the show.